Welcome to Power Play on a day that a small voice with a big message for MPs has died.
I believe strongly that despite what we see in this place, what gives us strength is the fact that we can actually do it. That we can actually engage in this process without fundamental rancor, without fundamental disagreement, without violence. That's the difference. And that's why I so love this place.
Well, in a statement earlier today, Arnold's wife said that he was a loving father, wonderful husband, and dedicated public servant. He proudly served as the Member of Parliament for Scarborough Agincourt for the past 3.5 years. And while he courageously fought his nasopharyngeal cancer, he has always continued to work hard for his constituents. Justin Trudeau weighed in as well. In June, Arnold delivered an impassioned speech. You saw some of that in that clip. I encourage all Canadians to take time to listen to Arnold's words, which hold lessons for us all. He reminds us that real democracy means listening to each other instead of talking over each other, and that our civic duty includes not just casting a ballot, but taking care in our everyday actions of the country we are lucky to call home. I tweeted a link to that if you ever want to see that one. And we will talk about the legacy of MP Arnold Chan as the Liberal who tried to bring civility in the House of Commons. That's with our press gallery coming up later in the show. Also on the show, Canada could be within reach of North Korean nuclear missiles, but the U.S. today warned it won't be defending us in case of an attack. Our former disarmament ambassador reacts to that and more. Also, airlines and advocates clash today over the need for passenger rights and allowing airlines to partner with foreign carriers. Both sides are just ahead. And the Mounties always get their man, they say, but they may have been using illegal cell phone tracking to do it. Our privacy commissioner discusses the findings of his new report. But first, the federal minister of health wanted better data on opioids deaths, and today she got the bad news in two reports. Opioid deaths and hospitalizations have hit a staggering peak. The data foreshadows 3,000 deaths from overdoses across Canada this year and pegs hospitalizations at a further 8 or 16 per day. Let's bring in someone who sees the carnage almost daily. Deirdre Freiheit is the president of Shepherds of Good Hope here in Ottawa. She joins me in the studio. Wow. I mean, you've seen the numbers. You see the numbers, but you see it right up close on your doorstep. What is it like? What's happening in your particular operation, which is probably replicated in cities right across Canada?
Well, what's happening this summer is something that we've never seen to this proportion. We've had a steady increase of overdoses all summer long, and we're just doing everything that we can at the moment to keep people from dying. That's essentially the bottom line.
What's the scale? What would it have been like a year ago, and what's it like now?
In the past, we would have had maybe a handful of overdoses in the shelter itself. Maybe, you know, less than 10.
Wow, we're seeing over a week or a month or
over a year.
A year,
and we're seeing probably 3 or 4 a day at this point.
Wow.
Yeah, it's nothing like we've seen.
What's driving that?
Well, we saw in February that fentanyl was coming to town. We've seen everybody, I think, in this community has been seeing, watching what's been happening out west, knowing that it's coming here. And that's what happens. So, you know, people are using substances, not knowing whether there are other things in those substances. And now we're seeing the effects of that. So overdoses have increased significantly, and it's only going up. It's been rising all summer.
And they're accidental for the most part. This is people who are taking other drugs, and these are contaminants, right?
Right.
What, I mean, is a question. You got resources that are limited. What can the governments do to help?
I think what's happening now is at least people are paying attention. It's reached epic proportions, so governments are starting to look and say, what can we do? At the community level, we get support from our governments in many ways. I think the stars might be aligning a little bit now just out of sheer crisis. We have to figure out how to make sure that people don't die. And we're seeing that happen across the country. So at Shepherds of Good Hope, we work on from a harm reduction model. So looking at trying to help people who may be abstinence-based programs, they may have tried them 4 or 5 times, they might not work for them. So do we just give up? What do we do? So we're looking at all different ways of helping people get the support that they need. In the shelter itself, we have basically have a mini hospital running out of the shelter in partnership with Ottawa Intercity Health, who provides health and wellness services to us in all
and
of our
And you're not
grants.
Unique, though, right? This is something that's happening in every city, I assume.
It's happening, yeah, it's happening in every city.
Are safe injection sites the answer to this, or just, you know, a sort of a Band-Aid treatment, if you will?
I think safe injection sites are a big part of the solution, but there are many ways that we have to go at this. And what works for one person doesn't work for another. There isn't a one-size-fits-all model, and so we have to look at, you know, how do we keep people safe? One of the things that we're doing this summer, which has been really effective, is having peer support workers go out into the community and actually talk to the people that they know and help support them. So our staff, inner city health staff, all of our people are actually going out. They've been trained. We've trained 500 people this summer on how to administer naloxone, and it's happening daily. So keeping people safe, building a rapport, building a trust with people so that they come to us when they need help.
It can't keep growing at this pace. It can't. I mean, this is just skyrocketing.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
Must be a terribly difficult job to be working with these people. All right. Also in Ottawa today, be it rushing to rescue stranded passengers or stranding passengers on idle planes, the airlines are facing Ottawa's demand to clean up their act. The Passenger Bill of Rights continued hearings today, with airlines facing off against passenger advocates.
The reason we specifically did this is because by giving the mandate to the CTA, which has the expertise because it deals with passenger complaints, we will come up with a set of regulations. I've been saying this since the beginning. By having regulations, you have the flexibility, much greater flexibility, of making adjustments to it in the future in case you want to adjust that Charter of Rights, instead of having to come back with a new piece of legislation if you put it in legislation, which is a much more onerous process.
All right, joining me now, Air Transat Senior Director of Government and Industry Affairs, George Petsikas. Welcome to the show, George. Nice to have you with us.
Now, thanks for having me on.
I don't want to drag out a sad memory, but, you know, Air Transat kept passengers on board for like 6 hours on Ottawa tarmac just in July. Emergency vehicles were called. And you know, I know it was an unfortunate situation, but isn't that Exhibit A for why we need a passenger bill of rights?
Well, look, I mean, we've been in the media on that one for quite a while now. And I think what I'm just going to say, other than what's already been said, is that obviously it was a very regrettable incident. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we apologize to our passengers for what happened. But it's also, I think, a cautionary tale, and one that can inform the legislative process that we are currently in, mm-hmm. and that the Government of Canada has introduced with their Bill C-49. One of the cautionary tales is the fact that this is a system. An airplane, when it flies in the air, a piece of metal at 600 miles an hour, 35,000 mm-hmm. feet, that's a pretty autonomous piece of work right there. Mm-hmm. The captain and his crew basically have it going, and they control the situation. But once that airplane lands on a piece of pavement somewhere, well, it's a whole new ballgame. It's in a brand new ecosphere with all sorts of players and service providers that have to work together to get passengers where they're going comfortably and efficiently. Now, when things go well, that's great. But when things don't go well and you have major disruptions as a result of weather-related issues like we saw, unfortunately, in Ottawa a month ago or a month and a half ago, well, then we come into challenges. And what we think we need to do going forward is to have some sort of proactive obligations on all the system providers here to work together. We need mm-hmm. plans at mm-hmm. these airports. And the airport authority is the ideally positioned intermediary to work with us. They work with ground handlers, they work with fuelers, they work with NAV Canada, and they have contact with the airlines. And I think they can come up with these emergency plans and better coordinate the services on the ground, which could probably have prevented a lot of the problems we saw in Ottawa a month and a half ago. So this is something that we're going to be sharing with legislators.
Yeah, I mean, is the fact that you could make this a standard expectation useful for both airlines and passengers? The idea, like, look, I've been stuck on the tarmac for 3 hours. It's going to cost you $300 if you don't let me off the plane now. I mean, and the airline then knows, hey, if we don't do something to get those passengers off, there's a financial penalty for doing it. Isn't that a useful arrangement to have?
Well,